Well, I guess we can get started. We don't have much to say for introductory comments, mainly welcome to the special session on humic products. We're very happy to be here. How many of you are not involved in the Humic Products Trade Association or the industry in general? How many newcomers do we have? Could you raise your hand? Okay, a good number. Okay, thank you. Thanks for coming. My name is Dan Oak. I'm a soil biochemist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Ames, Iowa, National Laboratory for Agriculture and the Environment. My colleague here is Lawrence Mayhew from Wisconsin, formerly of Midwestern BioAg and now a consultant. We're both involved in the Humic Products Trade Association, an industry group that was formed in 2010. So we'll start off with a discussion of the HPTA, move on from there to a method that the HPTA developed in response to crying demands by industry and regulators to measure, how do you measure these humic products, what's in there and in their contents. This is an ongoing affair. We welcome discussion on that. And after that, then we'll go on into field studies of humic products, trying to demonstrate how useful they can be in promoting crop growth. We have a couple of presentations on environmental uses, benefits to soil health. There are other uses we're not talking about here, uses in cosmetics, nanotechnology production, animal feed supplements. We are all very aware that humic products come from a history of snake oil. I encounter that almost every time I open my mouth and talk about humic products. I started working on them in 2009, and I could see in our own research trials that they do something to crop growth. There is something going on there. And so it's become a noble battle to weed out the snake oil, to highlight in a scientific manner what is going on with these humic products, when and where do they work, and how can we fit them into mainstream agriculture. This is going to be a longer term project. So before we go any further, we have a couple minutes. I'll finish by offering my congratulations or condolences to you personally for the results of last night. Thank you for coming so early in the morning after the election. Those who are new, do you have any questions on humic products or the industry in general before we start? We have 1 or 2 minutes left yet. Okay. Speakers, looks like the microphone is working just fine. We have to keep you on a strict time limitation, so we remain in sync with other sessions. Lawrence and I will take turns introducing you and getting the presentations up and running. There should be a mouse on here that you can use for showing things, and it's simple to advance your slides. So, should we start then? We're close enough. Okay, well, the first speaker is Russell Taylor, Live Earth Company in Utah. He's the current president of the Humic Products Trade Association, and he will tell you about this group and what it's up to. Russell.
Good morning, and thank you again for coming. My name is Russell Taylor. I am a certified crop advisor and also president of the Humic Product Trade Association. This is getting credit, so if you are CCA, come up, scan, and make sure you get your notices for being here. This is an outline of what I'm going to discuss. The Humic Product Trade Association, when we were founded, the purpose of the association. I'm also going to discuss the new definitions of the humic substances that were passed by the American Association of Plant Food Control Officials. This is key and important to the industry because previously these definitions weren't entered in and they had varied definitions. I'm going to discuss how these rule changes are affected by states. So, the Humic Products Trade Association was founded in 2010 primarily to address commercial uses of humic substances and also work with regulatory groups and get some scientific basis for these compounds. Now, the Humic Product Trade Association is comprised of manufacturers, and to be honest, when we first founded the Trade Association, we were excited we had that many competitors in the room wanting to get along. and the reason is there's enough problems facing the human product industry that all the competing firms were willing to work together and further these issues. So, as Dan mentioned, humic substances are used in several different industries. Dietary supplements, cosmetics, animal feeds, some industrial applications such as the drilling muds and in situ remediation. And last, fertilizers and soil amendments. So obviously, you know, we're here to talk today about the fertilizers and the soil amendments. So how are crop professionals using humic substances? These are not new products, but something new to some people who are in the conventional production. Agrarian applications, humic substances are broadcast directly to the field as a standalone product or with fertilizer. You're seeing that mixed with fertilizers, and not just organic fertilizers. In decades past, the organic consumers were the ones primarily using humic products. But you see the humic products more used by conventional producers now by virtue of blending that with those ingredients. So you're seeing it banded in the row and mixed with the fertilizers. Also, liquid application, you're seeing that mixed with the fertilizers in liquid form. Also, a mix at the dealer level. So you see humic products as a complete mixed product sold to the consumer, and also humic products mixed at the dealer level for the applicator for the farm. They're both mixed as a foliar and injected into irrigation or fertigation systems. So here are some of the claimed increases. I'm not going to go over each research paper. That's for those researchers to do, but I wanted to highlight some of the claims and things that the reasons that farmers are adding them to their fields. So obviously yield growth is a very logical reason. Yield uptake, increased availability of some of these nutrients such as phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, and increased availability of some of the micronutrients, iron, zinc, copper, all are mentioned in these research papers. These are published papers, some as old as 1981, some of the newer ones, 2011, and you'll hear a couple of compelling research is presented even later today at the part of this group. But again, you know, these are reasons and benefits why farmers are adding them to a field. So the question is it growing? Are farmers seeing benefit? And this is just showing a trajectory of how the market is growing. I trimmed some of the years out there to make the slide fit and be readable, but you can see even from 2013 to 2018, the market's nearly doubled. And the compound annual growth, that rate is around 12 to 13%. Your blue chip stocks and some of those very high yielding stocks are the ones that would grow at these type of rates. So at our annual meetings in years past, we've seen several agricultural investment type individuals looking at these products because the market is growing so quickly and consumers are learning about how these products are improving crop production. You hear a lot of discussion about precision ag and how precision ag is changing. And I think humic substances, while not a technical product as far as electronics or mapping, helps precision ag in the way that adds to the benefit and value of a producer. So here's some of the problems facing the industry and the reason and the foundation for the trade association. Adulterated products. There was many products in the industry that were touted to be fulvic and did not perform. A lot of Me Too products, when you see industries growing like this, a lot of people show up and say, hey, mine's just like humic. And so there was a need to weed out some of these adulterated products. Also, previous to the definitions, because there was a lack of definition, you had many products that were included to be humic or fulvic, but were not actual or considered by current definitions fulvic acid or humic acid. One of the other issues I'm going to highlight real quickly is the multiple test methods, and to illustrate the problem of multiple test methods and why a consumer having claimed you know, a certain amount of humic is a problem. So, and last, just by virtue of lack of definition and lack of consistent test methods, we have varied state regulation. So you have one state requesting certain standards for humic substances, and another state having completely opposite side of that requirement. And that's a problem both for labeling. Let's say, for example, you have one product labeled in one state that went to another state. It's just confusing for consumers, so I'm going to highlight a couple of those points. So some of the non-humic substances being sold as humic acids, fulvic acids, paper pulping byproducts, soybean extracts, and you'll see in the next couple slides here, we tightened that up so the definitions do include those substances and humic substances that are directly related to what we could consider a mainstream humic product. Other adulterants added are lignosulfonates, molasses, and coal. So, again, a broad spectrum of products being introduced to agricultural producers that are not humic substances. So, the following definitions that I'm going to show you, these are big definitions. I'm not going to read them verbatim. I'm just going to highlight some points of them. But these definitions were presented by the Association of Plant Food Control Officials, and these definitions are now in the books, part of the model bill for guidance for states. So when you see these definitions, some things you may have perceived as knowledge about how these definitions were have changed. For example, fulvic acid. But the definitions on the books now, humic acids, humates, humic substances, fulvic fraction, and the hydrophobic fulvic acids. So some of these are very small and straightforward, such as the humates, you know, the salts and the humic acids. And humic acids, this T64 definition, just describes how they're functionally defined. These are available in the AFCO OP, which is an official publication. It's readily available. You can get these in full, so there's no need to write them down. And that's a good preface to this one. So humic substances, I'm just going to skip to the bottom because this is the more important part. They are primarily harvested from terrestrial deposits. Leonardite, oxidized lignite, variations of oxidized coal, humulite, shales and peats, and other ancient deposits of plant material. Notice that here on the definition, you don't see soybean, you don't see some of the sugars such as molasses. Those compounds are not included in the definition. So as a producer buying these substances, look for that, and you will see that the definition has been refined and is very tight as far as where these products can be derived from. This is, again, I'm not going to read the full definition, but the hydrophobic fulvic acid is the change for those that previously knew the fulvic acid definition. So fulvic acid previously was those organic acids in solution that did not precipitate below a very low pH. And now the definition has been refined and said, okay, there were other things in that fulvic solution. And so we actually made the, if I can go back, there is a fulvic solution somewhere on those slides. Anyways, the difference in the new definition is these compounds that were in the fulvic solution are now being isolated. So the things that are not binding to the DAX8 resin are polysaccharides, amino acids, sugars, proteins, some of these things that were floating around in there being considered fulvic acid. So one problem that's going to be facing the fulvic industry in general is all these things that were floating around, were they active ingredients? We don't know that. The numbers that were claiming previously, let's say, for example, you had a 3% fulvic solution, those hydrophilic acids and other components are now filtered off. And so those percentages that are going to be claimed are going to be going down. So manufacturers who are obviously selling these products are going to be nervous, but you will see this change. And it's going to be a point of concern for both the producers who are buying products. Maybe they're previously buying a 3% solution and now they're getting a 0.3% solution. There is going to be some education about how perceived value is going to be communicated to the producers and also those selling these products. So, humic acid test method, I kind of hinted at this beginning about the problems. There is, in the main, states are using two or three humic acid testing methods to verify their products. The California Department of Food and Ag is a CDFA test. And the other one would be the colorimetric test. You see also described as ANL or some of those classical methods. Comparing these methods side by side on the same product, you can have a product that would underestimate by half. And I've actually taken this is a product that my company manufactures, and I've done side by side, this is the same product using both the colorimetric test and the CDFA test. And you can see The one product tested 11% humic acid, and the other product tested 6% humic acid. As a producer, you know, you want to get the best value proposition for your dollar. So if you're looking at two separate products having, you know, 11% and 6%, you would obviously buy the 11% if it was the same price. The problem is, due to varied test methods, you are seeing the same product have completely divergent results. And so that is both a problem regulatorily and also for those that are purchasing these products. So the trade association said, hey, you know, there's a problem here. Our first goal is going to be to refine and get a standardized test. That has to be the number one thing to get rid of the confusion. You know, we want to make sure that consumers are both educated and being able to buy a product that has the perceived value and have it be accurate. So the very rigorous process that we went through, developing a new standard, and that's the title of the new test method that the Trade Association has and has pushed through AFCO, which is the Association of Plant Food Control Officials. You can find it in the Journal of AOAC. You can see the citation there at the bottom. And this this method is going to be discussed by the next presenter. But this method corrects for a lot of adulterants. It corrects for ash. It corrects for a lot of the problems that we're facing in the industry, such as adulterants and things added to a humic substance. So this is going to add strength to our association, also those consumers buying these products. When you see this mark, you will know that mark is directly associated with that test method. Now, as the industry changes, not every state is brought on the test method quickly. They have to update their state legislatures or constitutions. So each state will be bringing on the test method on a state-by-state basis. Some states have automatically brought the test method on, and some states have allowed it. So you'll see states like Oregon, Colorado, Idaho, Wisconsin. Some of those states have already said, yes, we will allow not only fulvic claims, but we will allow the use of the mark. So this mark will be used directly with that previously mentioned test method. And hopefully we've brought value to the trade association and those consumers buying humic products. This is my last slide, so I did hopefully have a few minutes for questions. No, I have 5 minutes, which was done well, I guess. So go ahead with the first question.
Your A&L lab results, are those liquid or solid-based humic?
This is the liquid sample. Yeah, so several states have brought the Humic Product Trade Association, the method that we've endorsed as their method for that state. And those states said, great, thank you, you've done a very rigorous evaluation of this test, and it supersedes any value or level of quantification we've seen before. And that was a process done through AFCO. I believe it was described as a durability test.
Ruggedness.
So, yeah, several states are bringing that on. I was hoping to have a listing of the state for this presentation, and I called AFCO and said, okay, how many states are using what they call the model bill? And it's a model bill designed by AFCO, and those states will look at it and say, okay, we're using that model bill. And the secretary of AFCO chuckled. So that meant he told me I have to call each state individually and ask them, and I didn't have the time to go through each one. I can tell you the states who are not, and the states we are currently in discussions with. For example, this year the Humic Product Trade Association did meet directly with CDFA. We went to their office, sat down and said, hey, you know, you are one of the states that we really would like to see some changes. Here's the problem with your test method, and here's how consumers may be deceived. And our association is in the interest of consumer protection wanting to make these changes. And California said, okay, we will evaluate it and get back with you. So that is obviously not going to happen quickly, but they have requested test standards, and California is evaluating it. Other states that we did approach, such as Oregon, did evaluate it and said, yeah, that we look at this and we're going to go forward with it. So California, having a neighbor Oregon, allowing fulvic acids on the label, I think is going to put some pressure on California, but I don't think it's going to sway them quickly. The biggest issue with California accepting fulvic acid on a label. It has to do with more of an FDA issue and not so much about a claim of fulvic acid. So. Go ahead. The IHSS method?
Is it?
Okay, so the question is regarding IHSS, correct?
Yeah, how do you think about that?
So the method that IHSS has was used as primarily a background for the HPTA test, and those members actually were part of IHSS, were pivotal in developing this method. These gentlemen can speak to it better than I, because these were part of the scientific committee and the development of the method, but it was done with guidance with IHSS.
We had a meeting in 2008 led by IHSS scientists, Paul Bloom and so forth, and we looked at the different methods that were available at that time, and then came up with this one on paper as being an improved version with the stipulation that you'd be able to identify adulterants. This method is relatively a lot of work and it's slow, but that we're forced to do that because we were charged by both industry representatives and regulators to be able to identify adulterants, molasses, carbohydrates, things like that. And that necessarily complicates the procedure. And that's the reason why we have that DAX resin in there to separate out, especially the carbohydrates. It adds a lot of trouble to the method, but if you want to be able to identify carbohydrates, you have to be able to do that.
Well, good question. So currently there are about three or four labs that the HPTA is aware of, or our trade association is aware of, Thornton Labs in Florida, the Mott's Labs, which is here in the Phoenix area. I've heard also discussions of, let's see, there was two others that were reviewing it. Yeah, there's a few others that are reviewing it, but I do know at least two that are currently testing. That I don't. Thornton and Mott's, I believe.
I believe Mott's charges $60 for the humic acids and about $120 for the fulvic acids.
Can we go back to the slide which you had the source materials for your humic solvents?
Oh, it's your definition slide?
That one, yeah.
Yeah.
As a newcomer to this field, and not being familiar with the modified method that you now using, it seems to me that there's specific materials that you are excluding as being source materials for humic and fulvic acid fractions. So if there are alternative methods to producing humic and fulvic acids that will adhere to the text method, but still uses, for example, something like a coal or a carbohydrate source feed. How are you planning to handle that?
So the first thing about the goal of these definitions was to not be a catch-all bucket for everything. The HPTA is in the interest of, our goal is not to say those organic acids are not beneficial. Our goal was to exclude adulterated products and products that didn't follow a functional testing method. And so it's not our intent to exclude them and say they don't work. But there did need to be some parsing out for this definition.
So as long as they adhere to the new method, it should be okay to use those in the feedstock, for example?
Possibly. I had a discussion directly with Oregon, and for example, the first test they're going to run is a sulfur test on liquid fulvic. They're going to evaluate that and say, okay, is this a lignosulfonate? And if so, then the claims may put it out of the fulvic acid category, but it should be a beneficial organic acid. But that's the reason for the definitions, to not say that they don't work. It's just those precursors, lignin, cellulose, hemicellulose, were not broken down by maybe a traditional humic product and therefore not included in the definition.
Okay.
Okay, we'll have to stop there.